Bum 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 bum. Television aerial.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
It's Moser Hawes with his guest, Blue Register, Mud Funny Man Grabs Coward, Pocket Goddess Wally Monroe, and a visit from the Odd Guy. And now here's Moe!
Thank you, all of us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Big show tonight, lots to do. Lou Register is here. Pocket Goddess, Qualia Monroe, and the Odd Guy, ladies and gentlemen. Don, how was your weekend? Oh, Don.
Mouse.
Did I wake you?
No, I was attending to my organ.
You booped your organ.
Oh, I just booped it there.
I'm just saying. Anyway, lots to do tonight on the show. So we'll be right back, everybody, with Lou Register.
Seven awards for qual.
I am Odd Guy. I have powers beyond imagination travel at my might. I am the greatest performer because of my inability to perform. You both pity me and see me as an agent of Chow's.
Chow's?
Delight at my Chow's. Acting prowess. I laugh at your ability to dismiss me and your fascination with me as an object of both ridicule and love. Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
The Odd Guy, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, fantastic. He's an agent of Chow's, Don.
Ah, I did not know that. That's not easy.
Agent of Chow's.
Chow's. Agent of Chow's. I believe that's a reference to the old Buck Henry series, Got Smort.
All right, all right. Well, my first guest is not only a talented unloader of boxes and loader of boxes, but he's also my roommate and completely uninteresting. I'm going to welcome. Nobody else welcome. I say, Lou Register, everybody, get out here.
Hey, yo, everybody.
Happy holidays from my family to yours. We never got to the WFMU. Chef Jive, everybody.
Chef Jive, Chef Jive.
Ye elves of hills, brooks, standing lakes, and groves. And ye that on the sands with printless foot do chase the ebbing Neptune and do fly him when he comes back. You demi-puppets that by moonshine do the green sour ringlets make whereof the you-not bites. And you, whose pastime is to make midnight mushrooms that rejoice to hear the solemn curfew, by whose aid, weak masters though ye be, I have bedimmed the noontide sun, called forth the mutinous winds, and twixt the green sea and the azured vault, set roaring war. To the dread rattling thunder have I given fire, and rifted Jove's stout oak with his own bolt. The strong-based promontory have I made shake, and by the spurs plucked up the pine and cedar. Graves at my command have waked their sleepers oped and let them forth. By my so potent art. But this rough magic I here abjure, and when I have required some heavenly music, which even now I do, to work mine end upon their senses that this airy charm is for, I'll break my staff, bury certain fathoms in the earth, and deeper than did ever plummet sound, I'll drown my book.
Hello there. Excuse me. I was wondering whether you made up your mind about letting me go about my business on the island of Bermuda as you found me doing. When the cruise ship you were on landed here and you enslaved me. And I'd like to be let go.
Well,
If you could just hang on, Caliban, until I finish my whole revenge scheme.
But how long is that going to take?
Oh, I don't know, man. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm about this close to hooking up with the Italians and common murdering you in your sleep.
All right, well, I wish you wouldn't do that, but I understand.
Hey, Caliban.
Hello, Ariel. Just leaving. Well, bye, Caliban.
Hey, you got a minute?
Yeah, Ariel, what's up?
Are we about done with your little scheme? Because I have had it with these Italians. These guys from Naples, they think they know everything. They say, hey, nobody calls tomato sauce gravy. We're from Naples. We don't call it gravy. I say, have you ever been to Rao's restaurant in Harlem? No, of course you haven't, because you could never get a table there.
Well, all right. They do call it Sunday gravy there. Hi, friends. I should explain something. My name is Prospero, and I am stranded here on Bermuda. And you say, well, that doesn't sound so bad. Yes, but it's hundreds of years ago, and so there's no resorts here or anything. You can't even get a good bite to eat. You can't now, actually, but even now, even more so. There's nobody to cook the fish or whatever for me. So what I've done is I've taken native spirits and I've made them under my, gosh, I don't want to use the word, but I command their every movement. They answer to me. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I do it for myself and my daughter, Miranda, who's not biologically my daughter, because it's Lou. And so that it's an adopted situation. Anyway, it isn't because I really want my title back, which is Duke of Naples, which I don't even know if that doesn't even sound great. I think a lot about just abandoning the whole scheme, and I do want to give up the magic part. So I came here and I started studying books, and as you know, knowledge is really akin to the occult, because once you have knowledge, you can do things like, oh, summon storms. I've done that. I wanted to cause a shipwreck. Not literally, more like public relations shipwreck. And so I started furiously typing nasty things about the current Duke of Naples. It's a situation I didn't want to be in, and now that I find myself in it, I have become elevated beyond it, and it seems petty to me. And I sort of just want everybody to go back. I want them to get along. I want them to have a lesson a little bit, which would be to be lost at sea for a while, stranded on an island, you know, albeit Bermuda. It's when you get to an island. Never make a wish like that with a time travel genie. Say, oh, I wish I could go to, and you pick a tropical island. Oh, I want to go to Hawaii. And then you go to Hawaii in like the Stone Age or something. Say, well, that sounds pretty good. Who knows? I don't know what they did to people. You want to know, I've got some kind of travel book that says, if I'm time traveling, where don't they eat hearts? I don't really want that to happen. And they'll let you know. Where am I not going to give them malaria or vice versa? I don't want to, it's heck when you meet somebody and then you bring plague or they give plague to you and you take it home. And I guess there's ways to prevent that. A lot of it would be correspondence. We could have saved ourselves a lot of time. Just taking letters. Sailors could have just dropped off some letters. Say, how is everything there in the South Pacific? And they'd write back and they'd go, great. Please don't come ashore. Say, we wouldn't think of it. How'd the letters get there? Early drone technology. They would use animals, which is, that seems bad now. They were called carrier pigeons. And they would take things back and forth to people. And you put a message on them and they would know to come home. I don't know how that is. Anyway, on this island, here's the interesting thing about Bermuda. So I bumped into Bermuda. A lot of ships did this. It's kind of it was an early 17th century thing to do. Except I think, when did they first bump into it? I'm thinking a long time ago. The Spanish bumped into the Bermudas, which were big rocks, 22 mile by 2 mile rock thing sticking out of the ocean. You can bump into it. And the Spanish got there, and they were like, we're the first people to get here. And we don't want it.
Because they didn't know what they're going to do with it. So they said, you can have it. And the English looked at it, and the English look at anything that seems unusable or unlivable, and they'll go, this will do just fine. And so what they did there is repaired ships and, I don't know, just anything, enslaved animals. I really don't know. From then on, then there's a big gap. And then there's the 60s and cruise ships and things like that. And that's really when our story takes place, is during that period of time. And I'm not really as much concerned about being the Duke of Naples as I am concerned about making an appearance on Laugh-In, which is a goal, and it was usurped by my evil rock. Oh, that's enough television. Let's come back to reality. Hi, I'm Hardy White, and sometimes I do feel like Prospero, like I am on an island, and on this island is my daughter, someone I care about, a child. Let's say it's an inner child. And let's say it's an inner island. And they say no man is an island. And I say everyone's an island. Just no one man is an island. So this island contains my gentle child, my inner child, who happens to be named Miranda. And then it has a devil and an angel, like they're both sort of spirits, and you can command them both. You can do anything. You can make wind blow, or you can make people scared, or have them smell onions. And, of course, everyone has been a victim of some injustice, even if it's a tiny one. Some people are victims of colossal, soul-crushing, life-destroying injustices. Others, small, tiny, but still painful, relatively, injustices. And we all have felt the need for revenge, for getting back. So imagine that you have all your enemies on this island, and you are very powerful. You have more knowledge than they. You have more access to friends in the form of spirits, magical ones, that can inhabit their dreams or change their minds completely. And you want to fix this injustice. Now, when the power of punishment is in your hands, the power of destruction, accompanied by the power of creation, will destroying them undo the thing? Will it really calm your heart? If you had that much power, why not make everyone the way that you want? Why not repair the thing, build it, teach, enlighten, bring together, unite, and forgive? And with that done, you no longer need the magic wand. You no longer need the book of spells. Then you can say, let's leave this island of isolation and we can go back to Naples and dwell together. What has Naples given us? Well, I believe a yellow painting pigment. I've been doing a lot of painting recently, and the doctor says, hey, this may be a way not only to calm your nerves, but to poison yourself. And I said, boy, that's a mixed bag. But let's go ahead and try it. So I got some oil paints and also various gases. I went to the Army surplus. I said, are any war gases or something I can also use as paint thinner? And they set me up and they gave me some radioactive brushes from the 40s. And I set at it to paint pictures. Then I thought, what shall I paint? So I examined all the great artists of history. And I decided that I would bring bohemian types into my small New York apartment where I was raising my sons by myself. No, I'm confusing myself with Alice Neal. What did I do? I thought long and hard. I said, what shall I paint? And then I looked at my paints and I thought, what colors do I have? And then I thought, from those paints, what colors can I make? And then I thought, what things are those colors? Did I don't remember if it was that order or whether I saw something and I thought, I would like to stare at that for a while, because that's essentially what's going on. It isn't just making a thing. You might be able to do that quickly by another medium. It has to do with looking, really seeing, staring at something for a long time. And there aren't really a lot of excuses to do that. Now, I could make some up and say, I'm going to stare at a cup. I'm going to stare at a cup for 5 hours. Now, I don't know that I could make myself do that. But if I was painting that cup, I absolutely know I could. I could sit there and stare at the cup. I could take it apart, go over every centimeter of it with my eyes several times, an hour. Just concentrating on seeing what I see in it. Trying to tell myself what I'm looking at. We don't all, you know, see the same colors. But we could never know that. I don't know what your red is. We can kind of guess. And the way that I try to guess, almost, is I like to think of colors as notes, you know? So like a pure color is a note. And I don't know what that thing is unless it's in relation to something else. So if I put that next to something, then it has context. So if I take some sort of shade of red and I put it next to some sort of shade of blue, I make a kind of chord. And now they both have life in relation to one another. It isn't purple. I'm not mixing. They're standing side by side. And so they're doing something to you physically. And that's what I'm interested in. Well, that sounds strange. It does sound strange. But I find that when other people then look at those things, they have feelings. And you can transfer a feeling almost. So there must be some commonality of experience, at least. That's what I'm thinking. Beyond that, I do not know. But I like staring at things. I would stare at people if there was it's hard to do that. I don't know how people sketch people in public without, do you get caught? Do people look up? I think that about, Fox posted something. And she, riding the subway, and great sketches of people. I was like, did they look up? You know, because, what are you doing? What are you doing? Nothing. It's just capturing, you're taking your soul. If you're posing for a portrait, then you do sit there for a while and you have someone stare at you. I think they let you drift off to sleep unless and they yell, doing the eyes! And you open the eyes. I've never had anyone paint my portrait well, that's not true. Not with me present. Mr. Let's Paint, I think, painted my portrait from a distance. But I've never had my portrait done. Would someone like to paint me? No. Okay. For $8,000. All right. Well, let me think about it. I've tried to do self-portraits, and they're horrifying. I don't know what that's about. I think it's an inability to really look at myself. It's difficult. So I'm going to look at myself really closely. And I don't know why that is. Am I judging others then if I'm looking at myself like that? That's what I wonder when people are so quick to be self-deprecating, or worse, you know, self-maligning. I always think if they do that to them, maybe they're doing that to me too. So, oh yeah, I'm worthless. I go, oh gosh, if you think you're a worthless failure, what must you think of me? I often think about that, and I go, okay. But I like when people say, I'm giving you a compliment, and listen, I'm no slouch. So I like that. That doesn't seem like arrogance. I never think people are being, it takes a lot for me to think somebody's prideful or arrogant, because I think normally just healthy self-esteem, people see it as, you know, oh boy, you think pretty highly of yourself, that you don't want to, you know, that you think your life is precious. Yes, I do. I do. I mean, I'm not, you know, not at the expense of someone else's or anything, but yeah, I do sort of. I don't want to be talked into discounting my life. I think I only have one. And I think I'm being propagandized by people that don't believe you just have one or something. They must. If they knew, I wish I could convey to them, hey, listen, perhaps I might be, there might be two kinds of people. And what if you're the type of person that has more than one life, bless you, I think that's awesome. Enjoy them all. Collect them all. But I think I only have one, just the one. And that fills me with terror and loneliness. And so if you could just not wreck my moments, I guess is what I'm asking for. I'd like some, just some peace, you know, right now. And I know that you're bound and determined. And that does sort of come with not being human. So, is that part of being human? No, I think it's a specific culture and way of thinking. And I do not think it's just inherently human thing. Well, you know, humans are a horrible... I don't know that they are. I think that there's poison ways of seeing the world and others. But I don't think you're inherently anything, you know, except self-preserving and kind of clingy. And I don't think that would make you a menace necessarily, unless you had a bunch of things in your head. Most of what we have is not, we're not, most of what we react to isn't there. That's the strange thing. You see people look... If I came from another planet, I would see people looking at their hands, getting angry. Why are you so angry at your hand? Maybe it's what's in it. Put it down. I don't even know. Oh, I'm so angry. That sound, that makes me angry. Could you imagine that? You don't even know what, you're from an alien. You come to the Earth. You don't know what music even is. And you see someone flipping out because somebody put on Nickelback or something. I thought that. It's the subtlety. When I was living in France, the one thing I enjoyed the most was I couldn't figure people out. Like I couldn't easily, stereotype them. I didn't know what the stereotypes were. So here they even got names and everything. Somebody walked by and go, I can, you know, there's a name for sort of the character you're playing in this culture. You go to another culture, you go, I have no idea. You go, oh, that's, you know, that's a caron or something. There's no thing like, so I don't know who's cool, who's not cool. And then it's a little tedious because there's no shorthand. So what you have to do is you sort of have to judge every individual by what they do. And I don't even stand what they say. So I just have to kind of watch them. And I think that if I was I'd be sitting around a load of gorillas or bonobos. That's how I was lost in the jungle and I was adopted by these chimps. And we sit around and we pick salty skin off each other's scalps and ticks and things. And then I meet some talking chimpanzees, and they go, why are you hanging out with them? I go, what do you mean? They go, do you know their beliefs? I go, no, I don't know. I just know, you know, that they pick off the bugs out of me and everything. I go, oh, if you know. That's actually kind of like being a child, because I didn't know what my family, who they were, or what they believed when I first came into them. I just kind of clung to them and loved them. You just don't know. I think about that when I see children at the fair. I go, do you know what family you're in yet? I wonder. Oh, do-do-do-do. This one's mama. Wait till you figure out. Wait till you hear all the things they say, how they actually conform or don't conform with your reality. Oh, children, this is your friend Harley White. I'm not trying to corrupt you. I'm trying to get... I wish... I know that Mr. Rogers couldn't have done this at his house. I know there was a line, but I wish that he could have said, hey, I know your parents might have wacky beliefs. Listen, on some level, they're not you, you know? So you don't have to, you are not condemned, doomed to live out their lives or anything. You can break away. And I know he had secretly was helping people leave cults and everything. No, he's not. Was he? Yes, he said we'd have a long guess. Who's this? Oh, this is my friend. And she, I don't want to say her real name, but I'm helping her transition from her Hasidic group into, now she's going to work here at the studio. Now, I don't remember that happening, but he did all sorts of things that people weren't aware, I believe. He wore many hats and many rumors. You can see also, and people couldn't read him. That's another thing, I think. And are people able to read me? Am I a stereotype? I'm sure we all are. Everybody adopts a sort of character, just like when Mission Impossible, when Mr. Phelps, Swim Garden was the first one. When he picked his team, he lays out all the different types of people there is. You know, are you a rolling hand? Are you a lighting hand? Are you a puffing hand? I don't know what the other kind of hands are. But the Lord is choking me for that. Are you a Peter Lupus? I think maybe the key is to find that Peter Lupus inside of you and all those characters. So you don't have to settle on just one. I'm going to be cowboy. Things like that. I used to work at an arcade when I was in... I don't think I was in anything in my 20s when I was in the Navy, college, none of those things. But I was working at an arcade, and different, like, older teenagers would come in, and they all did have, they decided they're going to be a type. You know, because you get that age, you don't know who they are. Some of the types were based on their parents. So, my father's a violent alcoholic who works for the city. So I'll be that type of person. Could be anything. And I'd see them playing out all those things, and I'd think, I wonder in the future whether they'll be a different type of person. There was a movie called 7 Up, then 14 Up, then 28 Up. Now I think now they're into their hundreds and some. They did one in Soviet Georgia where they did, it was 128 Up because of the yogurt. And they follow these children from basically cradle to grave. And they would speak to them after the grave. And they would say, what was all that like? What were the film? And eventually everybody dies. The filmmakers die. It'll be the descendants of the people. You know, what's up now? Like, what's happening now? Everything's a sequel. Are we doomed to live the sequels of our ancestors? Well, the Bible tells us, yes. This is what the Bible tells us. Now, this is very interesting. And you're going to say, this can't be. But the Bible predicts which sequels are going to be good and which are going to suck. Hear me out. I know this works for Star Trek. I think, or one of them. No, it works the opposite. I think it's one. Never mind. I got it backwards. But the Bible says this. Abraham comes first. That's the original. That's one. And then Isaac is two. That's the sequel. That's not as good. This doesn't actually work with anything, because I'm thinking Godfather, Isaac would be pretty okay. So Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Number three is good. Joseph, four is good. Oh, I guess that doesn't predict anything. Scratch that whole Bible message. It's got a different message going on. Here's what's happening there. The overwhelming love of Abraham comes first. The dominating spirit of the parent. And then the child is diminished by this a little. And they live their lives recreating that of their parents. They live in the shadow there, have no real identity. They themselves become blind to what's really important. They can't distinguish between the positive part of their legacy and the negative part of their legacy. And then what happens next is a sort of cleverness in Jacob. Jacob is clever. He is that. And he must wrestle with this problem now of being in the shadow. How do I be a third thing? How do I not be obscured by Abraham's powerful love? How do I not fall into the shadow of Isaac's self-doubt? And so he learns to manipulate things. He learns to make deals. And then he gives birth to the ultimate, to Joseph, to the beautiful child, to the pure spirit, who then realizes that they contain all these things. They contain the ability to give and to receive, to create and destroy. They become the balance. They become the balanced fruit of this. Oh, thank you. Turn in your hymnals. Turn them in. Turn in your Bible to me. Turn them all in. No, don't turn them in. Turn the page. You can turn the page now. Now, why would you give such a sermon? Well, I'll tell you why. Because there's a rabbi standing behind me with a hitting his hand with a bat going, "You better give that drosh," he said on the radio. No, I just felt like it was a good story. And I was using it for, if it proves something opposite of what people already decided they're going to believe, then they discount it. If it reinforces what they already believe, they think that that it's prophecy or something. That's what's so easy about it all, is that nobody's mind has really changed. You just kind of twist things around to give them what they already want to hear. And even in the form of, you're not going to want to hear this, but secretly you do want to hear that. You want your beliefs reinforced, even if you have to make a little bit of change. So that's amazing. And I try not to do this. How do you not do that? I try not to say anything. I try to give my love unconditionally. I try to understand that I know that you believe things that are wrong. And on one level, I believe they're all wrong. So how could I really disagree with you? Mine are all wrong too. And so I'm going to go by, I don't just go by actions because I'm not a fool. If somebody tells me, hey, bonobos bite off fingers and throw poo, I'm not going to have, that's one thing. I go, well, I might not need to prove that myself. I'll keep my distance. I might test it a little bit to see if you're lying to me, but I'm going to err on the side of caution for some things. I'm not a fool, though a fool I am. I'm so glad you're with me. Now, as we approach, I'm sure we're approaching the holiday, whatever holiday, even if this is, now it's not a rerun. Now, this show's never aired, nor has any part of it before. This is the first time. How do I know? I don't know. I guess you're going to have to just not trust me as much as not care. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, does it? That's the thing. A lot of things we think require faith or trust. Really, just no answer is necessary. Your belief, just put it away. You don't need it all the time. You don't need it all the time. People want you to use it a lot, more than you need it. Because it's really, belief is really kind of special occasion sort of knowledge. For me, it is. It's something that's like, well, you know, all else has failed. I guess I'm going to have to believe this. I think I'm going to have to spend all the rules. It is, that's what it is. If you have to suspend all the rules, change the rules, that has to be only very rare exception for me. Otherwise, I'm going to stick with the rules, and they are, you know, figuring things out, evidence, all that kind of stuff. I think about things. Oh, I do think about things. I try to think about them over an extended period of time. I realize a lot of people don't do that. And I'm not saying, and I'm not brilliant or intellectual. I really think about something for a long time. I just always plan on doing that. I think I'm going to have something I've been thinking about a while. It means like whenever I have a moment, when nothing's going on, I sit there and I'll think about a thing, or I'll read about it. look something up, do a little research. Just have an ongoing mind project for no reason at all. Isn't that a funny thing? So I might think about a person or an event or an artist. And then I just think, I don't do like active research. I just like always try to keep it in the back of my mind. So I'm thinking about a thing or an idea. That's another one. So I'll always be thinking about the idea of maybe telling a story or what that means or what people want to hear when they're listening to something. What do I hear? This is very interesting and Shakespeare oriented. I was listening to interviews with Shakespearean actors, and one of them was Dame blah, 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 blah. And you'd know her name, and I should. And it'll come to me. I know it will. Judi Dench. It was Judi Dench. That's not the way she talks. That's just the part of my head that remembered. I think it was Judi Dench. And they were talking about the rhythm of Shakespeare and the meter and all. And she was saying that she was taught to treat it like music, not try to turn it into natural speech, but to sort of stay on the beat and give it a rhythm and deliver it like you're delivering a song. And so instead of having a speech oriented the way that people really talk, I don't even know how that is. I don't speak to you the way people normally talk, do I? I'll tell you why they wouldn't, because they're interrupted. And so a lot of times I have friends that if I left a pause half that long, they'd say there'd already be a million, I'd lost my place on stage. But when I speak to you like this, there can be a pause. Isn't that interesting? It's a different way of being spoken to. And I think that's why we like it. It's a little bit anonymous too for both of us. It's like staring. It's the listening equivalent of staring. We call eavesdropping sometimes, too. You're eavesdropping on my thoughts. The way you're sitting in a restaurant, and you're listening to a conversation next to you. And sometimes I love to do that, even if it's completely, the more banal, mundane, the better. I want to hear what other human beings are doing. I want to stare. I want to listen. I want to take it all in. Now, I really want to try to see it. And so I like to do that. And here's the curse. I'm sort of afraid of people. But that comes from knowledge. I'm not afraid of people. Well, you should be. Boy, they're scary. Man, they're dangerous. Been made so by things. If I could get them alone for a while. No, not like that. But I mean, if I could... You know, if they could just live somewhere else for a while, where the rules are different or something, and treat it a little differently, maybe they'd be a little different. So I know that from all sorts of things, from dogs, too. Dogs are like that. Say, I don't know what your doggy ways were at that other house, but we do things a little bit different here. And so right now you come and get some loving, because we always have time for that. Who's a good one? Who's a good one? Who's a good? Who's a good one? I spent most of my time doing that, actually. I see that you're not getting as excited as my dog does. But if I was to go, who's a boop, 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 like that, I don't want to do it now because one of them will hear me. Maybe you did get excited. Say, Hardy, I did get kind of excited. Are we going to have treats? I know. Let's eat something and just hang out together. Maybe try not talking. I don't know if the silent... Do people get in fights at silent retreats? I imagine they do, but I bet it's words mainly. I doubt anybody have a silent fight where they start shoving and hitting. They've never said anything. What if that was the actual plot of The Quiet Man? What is that, John Ford's them? To have The Quiet Man be quiet. Nobody talks. It's Ireland, but they're not... Nobody talks. And they just get in a... John Wayne gets in a fight with somebody and they have this... fight over the rolling green hills in complete and utter silence. The Quiet, Quiet Man, it's called. That's a new film. You put that together. You go out and Hardy White has given you that. That is my gift to you. Oh, my friend, not only the show itself, which you can sample and you can use in the... I would put it on vinyl and then you can scratch it.
And now my charms are all o'erthrown. And what strength I have's mine own.
which is most faint now, it's true. I must be confined here by you or sent to Naples. Let me not, since I have my dukedom got and pardoned the deceiver, dwell in this bare island by your spell, but release me from my bands with the help of your good hands. Gentle breath of yours my sails must fill, or else my project fails, which was to please. Now I want spirits to enforce, art to enchant, and my ending is despair, unless I be relieved by prayer, which pierces so that it assaults mercy itself and frees all faults. As you from crimes would pardoned be, let your indulgence set me free.
There is an expression, a tempest in a teapot, which means that there's a big storm, a little big fuss about nothing. That ultimately, that's a storm in a teapot. But I would like to add that if you're on a tiny little boat, like a tidy bowl, that's before a lot of your times, but they used to have very tiny little people in the back of your bowl where you do a double-decker in, not in that, in that area. But if you, these little people could be in your teapot, I don't know. There's little, there was a child's book called The Occupiers or something, and there's little people lived in the cabinets, in this kitchen, this house. There's little tiny people, and which you'd think would be fine, but to the, they looked like cockroaches. They're people. So this is a Kafka-esque thing. So there's a whole civilization that lived in the walls, but because they looked like cockroaches, the people who lived there would, well, dehumanize them. And they never knew anything. They never tried to learn their language or anything like that. They just would, filthy, dirty. And they go, well, we're, you know, maybe you're filthy dirty to them. I imagine that with a, could you imagine a, the proper big American cockroach, which they call palmetto bug, which doesn't, in Florida for some reason, but it's an American cockroach the size of a large, very large thumb. Like if somebody's about 6'4" of their thumb. And one of those comes flying at you during mating season. Right at your face. They don't want to be there any more than you want them there, I don't think. I don't know that any cockroach has done that on purpose. It's a mistake. You go, oh, they're out to get me. You're reading too much into it. You know, just gently nudge them out of the way. Say, no, not today. I'm not, you know, not your type, or something like that, and brush them gently out of the way. We make a lot of, I was watching a lot of old talk shows, and I noticed that there was a brand of humorist, it was comedian humorist, that would get a lot of laughs for being cruel. Anybody who was like, say, oh, I don't care, just kill him, or I want him dead, or something like that. They, people would just giggle, I guess, either uncomfortably or agreeing with them. But it's, I always find that interesting. I like to listen to it, but it's not a laugh line for me when somebody, you know, expresses their individuality by saying, you know, I don't know about you, but I have no feelings. Oh, you're irascible. So I listen to that sometimes, and I think, well, they're telling it like it is, if you're a psychopath. So, that's interesting to me. A lot of, like, a person I like absurdity. So I don't, a lot of times that, you know, grievance humor isn't my favorite, but that's, maybe I just did it right there. So I don't know. You know, you do, you tend to be able to accuse. I notice that I accuse others of what I do. I do that all the time. I go, you're genius. I'll be saying that all the time. You're just a work of genius. And I know really I'm talking about me. But I try to point at other people, tell them how great they look. I go, man, you have a non-traditional physique, but it's alluring, I will say. And I'll think, stop myself. And I'll say, who am I really talking about? Me, I think. Sometimes, I don't know. I'm not, sometimes I do put, when I do put myself down, I'm the best at it. Nobody can top it. I've seen that a lot of times, and I've caught myself doing that. And, you know, I'm the most depressed, or something like that.
I was like, wow. You know, that's something to be happy about, maybe. But I guess it adds to your depression sometimes to think, gosh, not only am I really, really sad, but I'm really just, it's almost averagely sad. And that's, nobody wants to be. And I think the fear of being just another number, just another person, has to do with disappearing. You say, well, am I nobody? I don't want to lose this. I feel like I'm someone. It's a consciousness thing. Will I disappear? Will I dissipate if I become convinced of my own, you know, uselessness or not uniqueness? What's the word? You know what I mean. And I would just like to tell you, no. I forgot what we were talking about, but don't worry about it. You are wonderful, and your world, so much of it, is yours. So there you go. That's your world. Your world. We're in your world. So just think of it that way. Say, hey, I'm running things. Maybe I'm Prospero. Maybe this is an island. You know, maybe I do have like a little angel and a devil who do my bidding. And maybe I do want to get to a place where I can let them both go away and be free and freelance. Go do freelance devil and angel things. And I'm going to go about my mundane business of being the Duke of, I'd like to be the Duke of Naples again. But I don't see that probably won't happen. So just be a good dad. That's what Prospero, at the end of the day, say, hey, he may not be the Duke of Naples, but he's my wizard daddy. I think that'll... I saw that shirt at a pride parade. I'm going to get one. There's a, I get very excited just at any prospect of being able to share, to be in a community with folks, and to have everybody on the island who's shipwrecked there realize that they're shipwrecked on an island together. And, you know, I think that's pretty great. And I'm lucky to be able to have the one that...
Hello,
I have the microphone. I often feel like that.
This is a tour.
You're on a tour, and I'm not the captain, but somehow, some boats, the captain will have his own mic, right? And sometimes they're driving our boat today is Rusty. My name is Phil. He can't talk, I can't drive. So there we're combining and we're splitting the money, which is feeble. So tip both of us on the way out. On your left, you will see, well, again, Rusty. And he's doing a good job over there. And there's no windows on the van. I apologize for that. But this way we get to use our imagination. Close your eyes, if you will, as we drive down the main square of our fair town, Bermuda. I know that's not a town, it's an island. Where it would be. We're driving down Front Street in Hamilton, Bermuda. And on your left, so we're going that way. On your left, which way? Oh, man, I don't know. East, northeast? I don't know. But then you see some cruise ships over there. Listen, I'll tell you what. Everybody get out. Get out of the van. No, I'm sorry. I'm not really mad at you. It's my fault. I'm an inadequate tour guide. I should have looked at the place I'm giving you a tour of. And I thought, well, I know the human mind because I've lived in it my whole life, but I don't really know it. That's the thing. You might have lived in your hometown your whole life, but could you really give a tour of it? Go, well, this is downtown. And a lot of the tour you'd give would be from your perspective. Say, this is where my mother worked at that drugstore, and this is where it used to be a shop where we used to get winter coats. It's not there anymore. I don't know the name. So that's most people how they would do the tour there. But sometimes a stranger can do it better if they're a historian. Say, all my historian archivist friends, it's very strange because they're the ones that are most using their degrees. I find that. Although all my English major friends are still speaking English. But a lot of the history majors are doing history, I've noticed. I've noticed that. Some people go, you ask a child, you go, what are you majoring in? They go, psychology. What are you going to do? I'm going to law school. Oh, okay. What are you majoring in? Biology. What are you doing? going to law school. All right, that's fine. What are you majoring in? Religion. What are you doing? I'm going to medical school. I don't know if you can do that. Maybe you can. I guess if you pass the test. Can you skip the whole school if you can pass the test? Can you just take a medical boards or something? I wonder. I think it used to be that way with law. So you pass the bar, you're in. You don't need that degree necessarily. Because what happened, I went back and, this was a dumb idea. I went back and I studied with Henry Clay. I went back in time and he was giving me law lessons. And I thought, oh, this is easy. I'm going to easily pass the bar. And all the real estate stuff I got wrong, completely wrong, taught me wrong. I don't know whether things were different then, but oh, a lot of stuff I got wrong. And then I guess, I don't know whether it was his accent, but he was saying the word tort, I guess, but I was hearing something else. So that whole section, torts, I was like, I don't even know what that is. I think it's a contract. But law, I don't know. Law, I guess that is something you want. At some point, they stop caring about professional license. Have you noticed that? There's like a hierarchy. So like doctors, lawyers, they're pretty, go get that license, got to get certified, and there's all this rigor. And they go, barbers, hairdressers, yes, okay, yes. Massage, yes, touching people, massage, touching hair, touching everything. Massage, palm readers. I don't know. They're touching you. I don't know. Certified? So then it goes down the list and you start other certified, what else? Lawn, mowing your lawn? Proof of the pudding is in the tasting. They do it wrong and they do it right. Should they have been tested first? I don't know. And then the bar, when the bar gets low enough, it's just, are you bonded? You know, are you going to be alive? If I hire you, it's not even, are you going to do it right? Are you going to mess it up so badly that we all go to court? So that's the only, and those are the jobs that I've mostly had. So I'd like to come on your premises and be a charlatan. And they say, well, are you bonded? And I go, yes. That's the one thing. As long as you have insurance, come on someone's property, and then you can do, I don't know, I do like a made-up feng shui with, I make up words, and I'll go, I got a rub, 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 like that, and I'll rub something on my head, and they pay me. And I'm not certain, I don't know whether you have to get certified or not to do something imaginary. The radio, you don't. Is licensed. You got to be licensed to broadcast. We're on somebody else's piggyback on a license. I'm not touching any knobs, so to speak, right now, so I don't have to. But if I was going to touch something, you got the, I do have one floating around somewhere. But yeah, it's a funny thing. Maybe I should give out license for listening, for seeing. I'm going to give them out free. I'm going to certify you right now. I want you to put your hands on your eyes if you want. And say, Hardy White, who has no power to do anything, so really he's just suggesting it to me that I exercise the power over myself. I give myself permission to see with clear eyes. I give myself permission to hear with clear ears, which they actually might need. Now, my eyes may not work, you say. Say, Hardy White, I am not a sighted person. Say, I understand that. I have many friends who are not. I'm talking about a different type of seeing. It's not always light. You can see with whatever sensations come to you. There are those who have no sensations at all. So Irene Moon's husband was working on something. He communicated with a person he knows that has no hearing or speech or sight. And they had this touch pad and everything. It was done like that. And that fascinated me. And you know that when you communicate with a person like that, that they might say something like, I see what you're saying. Because the seeing sort of means understanding. I'm going to take in what I can through my senses, whether they're really sharp or whether they're not. And then I'm going to translate it into something, to some sort of meaning. I'm going to assign it some sort of meaning, even if it's a color, even if it's nothing, even if it's a vibration. Because nothing has any meaning unless I put it on it. It's just stuff. I'm making it all up. Yeah. I'm making it all up. I'm naming things and I'm giving them purpose and they don't have names. That's me. What would I do if I didn't name the things or I didn't know about their context? What kind of world would I see? What would I be looking at? I think about that, too. And I'm thinking about it right now. Are you on drugs? Not the kind that make you think that. Just the kind that... I'm just the kind that make you pee so that your potassium levels don't get too high. But that's it, you know. And occasionally, pain medication as I get creaky. It just distracts me. I wouldn't mind if it didn't distract me from thinking about needless things. I'm so glad you joined me. I'm so glad you heard the beginning of the show. Did you hear that, where I was on television in the 80s? What a fun time it was. That was me. I played the odd guy on the old Moza Hoett show. It isn't from this universe, unfortunately, so you can't get it anywhere. But I have a VCR that plays things from possible worlds. I'll have to do more, whip that out more. Because I think you guys like it. I have this feeling. Oh, my friends, you make my life so wonderful. I mean, it's not wonderful. It's not. It's often it's agony. But you make it wonderful. And then I throw a little agony in there. I put the sauce on it. You provide me with the feast. And then I put the sad sauce on it sometimes. But I thank you so much for the love and affection. So is it love or what is it? I don't know. I don't care what it is. It's other human hearts, and I can feel them, and I love the imperfection and the limitations of our communication. And we're trying desperately. Everything here on this station is a desperate attempt at communicating, mainly by the DJs, but the music is that too. Everything that we say is an attempt to take the sensory information that we get and to interpret it and to throw back some stuff out, see if it has the same effect on you. And I hope it does. What am I trying to get? I'm trying to give you a sense of peace more than anything. Joy can wait. Let's go for peace. I'd rather you just steal your heart right now, because I know a lot of people say, oh, people want me to be happy. Don't worry about happy. Let's go for stillness. Let's go for peace. Let's calm the seas first, right? And then we'll worry about that. Let's get this, let's get a stillness to your soul first so you're not hurting. And then we can work on joy. We can stick some joy in there while we're doing it. It might sneak in. But I just want you to be, I want to give you peace more than all, anything. Oh, my friends, you are, I am Prospero. No, I'm not Prospero anymore. Just Hardy White, Duke of Milan or whatever, Duke of Naples. And I keep forgetting which one I am. King of Naples, Duke of Milan. I'm one of those. I haven't checked. I did my genealogy and I was like, what? I'm just glad to be with you. And you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. My friends, thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
My name was Mahogany, twins' name was Ebony. Mahogany, twins' name was Ebony. My name was 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 Mahogany, twins' name was Ebony.
Her name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany.